third case of the morning is number 06-1934, Arnett against the Commissioner of Internal Revenue.
May it please the Court. My name is Larry Harvey, and I'm representing Mr. David Arnett. This is a case of statutory construction of a regulatory statute. The petitioner is one of approximately 150 litigants in the tax court in a case concerning the application of Section 911 of the Internal Revenue Code to foreign income earned and sourced in Antarctica. The petitioner in the year 2001 worked for Raytheon Corporation. He was stationed in Antarctica. Raytheon has a contract with the National Science Foundation for certain scientific research.
And in terms of the facts, I think we're well familiar with that. If we could get to the statutory construction, because one of the things you've argued is the word includes in the regulation is meaningful, and that we shouldn't take it to mean should be read as, you know,
Your Honor.
And other than for persons working in Antarctica, in what situations would reading the regulation to truly mean includes be necessary?
Well, that regulation is curious in many respects. It begins off stating, in a geographical sense, the term foreign country includes. And it's sort of puzzling that the language that they chose right there relates to a geographical sense when it may be sort of tied to sovereignty issues. And that's what the regulation does. And that's where the regulation, I believe, goes wrong, Your Honor. But before you get to that regulation, I believe that there's a primary step that needs to be taken that was omitted by the tax court, and that step is a review of the statute under the Chevron standards. The Step 1 Chevron standards requires this court, and any court, to first look at the plain meaning of the rule for, in this case, foreign country within the context of IRC Section 911. But it also says something more. It says that there is to be a review of the term within the broader statutory language. The tax court did none of that in its opinion below. But I believe that this court has an interesting case here because we have the benefit of two other cases, one by the United States Supreme Court, the Smith case cited in the brief, and one, David Smith, which is a Massachusetts case. The Smith case, of course, is the Federal Tort Claims Act case, and the David Smith case is the Fair Labor Standards Act. We have the benefit of the United States Supreme Court looking at the plain meaning of the term within that Step 1 of Chevron. There, they use the typical techniques that have been adopted and developed over the years for interpreting a statutory term. In both cases, they have found that the word foreign country includes Antarctica. In both cases, the fact or the consequence of such definition excluded certain benefits to the workers there, but in fact, consistently with those two acts, there was a definition found within the plain meaning of the word, but went on beyond that to look at the statutory context. For various reasons, the court in Smith, found that the Foreign Tort Claims Act, Federal Tort Claims Act shouldn't apply, venue rules and the like. Here, I believe it's very clear that there's a compelling argument that this rule, which allows an exclusion for foreign earned income, should be applicable to those that are stationed in Antarctica. Nowhere in the statute is there a requirement that the income that you earn under this section be taxable. It will apply if you're in any foreign country that does not have an income tax, and there are a number of foreign countries that do not. If you're one of those, based upon this argument that the government has advanced, that so long as you're in a place where there's a sovereignty, you will be able to take advantage of this exclusion. Whereas here in Antarctica, you are not because there is no sovereignty. Well, that's what the government tries to do, is sort of a backhanded way to incorporate a taxability requirement to the statute when none is found in the statute. There's no definition of the term foreign country in the statute, but 911B1A states the term foreign earned income with respect to any individual means the amount received by such individual from sources within a foreign country. It does not say taxable amount received. It's strictly pegged to the amount that is received by the person for wages, salary, and the like. Because of this, I think you have a compelling argument that just at step one of Chevron, that you have a construction that is advanced by the Internal Revenue Service that is untenable. They basically are trying to legislate here, adding requirements to this section of law that just aren't present in the statute itself. The Smith case
in the U.S. Supreme Court acknowledged that there is more than one meaning that could be ascribed to the term foreign country, and then went on to perform the statutory contextual analysis that you referenced earlier in the Tort Claims Act context to give it meaning in the context of that particular statute. So we have an acknowledgement by the Supreme Court that the term is ambiguous, which under Chevron means we defer.
Your Honor, I believe I disagree that they've ever found that's ambiguous.
Well, they said it's susceptible to more than one meaning, which is the same thing.
But potentially, in Chevron, what Chevron does is give the court tools to resolve whether or not there's an ambiguity. So in that particular case, what they did was look at the statute to try to decide if there was an ambiguity. They didn't have to go that far. That's what the tools, traditional tools of statutory construction do. They assist the court in resolving meanings in statutory language, and it prevents a finding that there is an ambiguity. Step one of Chevron is actually a rather large test. It's not a perfunctory review. It is designed to resolve instances of ambiguity. And here, like in the Smith case, a review of that statute leads to quite an insight into an interpretation of the term. You know, some writers have said there's always ambiguity in a phrase. Well, what the Chevron test does is to take that ambiguity out with a certain set of rules that the court can use. And the traditional tools of statutory construction, which are available to a court under step one, are used to resolve whether or not there is an ambiguity, and they can do it at step one without getting into what has been perceived by our judiciary as some less helpful information. The step two inquiry that can arise under Chevron relates to the review of the legislative policy and the like. You can go into any different number of issues there, but I don't believe that you get to step two here because of the fact that you can look at that statute, and under that statute, you can find a meaning. It's to exclude income. If you were to move to step two of Chevron, I believe that the government has failed to make a valid argument here as well. They've cited legislative history. Legislative history, I do not believe, belongs in this analysis. But if it were, they've cited only one issue of double taxation. Well, that's one of the concerns with legislative history. It's unenacted. Who knows who's writing it? Who knows who's paying attention to it? The plain text of the statute is more reliable. The United States Supreme Court has adopted the plain meaning test and is elevating that. There's been an ascendancy of the plain meaning test. In the Gitlitz case, which was another tax case that was recently decided by the court, they approached the question of an S corporation's effect with COD income, cancellation of debt income, strictly on the plain meaning. Even if it led to a result that the IRS was arguing was unpopular and perhaps not intended, they said the plain meaning of this statute can be discerned by the text, and therefore we do not need to go to policy statements.
Let's say we disagree with you and determine that the statutory phrase is susceptible to more than one meaning. You would agree that the regulation in question that defines foreign country, essentially to exclude Antarctica in this case, is a legislative rule that gets the higher level of deference?
I believe it is. There is a specific delegation in the statute to making rules that are helpful. But I do not agree that statute, even if it might be considered to be a legislative one, will allow the court to abdicate its role in reviewing whether or not the statute has a permissible meaning. Even if you give it, quote, Chevron deference, there still is a standard that must be applied to that regulation, and that's arbitrary and capricious. Now, I think it's important here that these same rules that you can use to construe the statutory language can also be applied to show what I think is a weakness in the regulatory language. Nowhere in the statute is foreign country defined. Yet, in that regulation, they've incorporated a sovereignty requirement. And it's important, Your Honor, when you consider some of the other cases that have been out there. In the Smith case itself, which overruled a D.C. Circuit case called Beatty, which was also in the Federal Tort Claims Act, the litigants in that case have been arguing that you need to incorporate a sovereignty requirement in it. And the Supreme Court there overturned Beatty and said that the language, the plain meaning rule itself, undermines the incorporation of a sovereignty requirement.
Well, actually, I think what the court said in that case is that there are other aspects about the statute that would be irreconcilable with the construction that the Beatty court had placed on it.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but they also...
Consistent with the dissent in the Beatty case.
Yes, Your Honor, but they also do take a plain meaning. In the Smith case, they take a plain meaning.
As an initial matter, and then after saying the plain meaning of the phrase doesn't necessarily control because it is susceptible to more than one meaning.
Yes, I agree with you, Your Honor, that there is this sort of look at the greater context. But in the context, if we're back to your question, if we are looking at the regulatory language, The language, by incorporating the sovereignty requirement, has essentially said, let's add a taxability requirement to this income. The statute doesn't say that. It just says it's amounts received. But by using the term sovereign, they've incorporated this type of taxability statute. We're talking about Antarctica. There's not a lot down there except for ice and snow and darkness. And there is sort of an odd situation down there with this treaty. It may have a middle ground. But at any rate, you have a situation where, while there may be no sovereign, the only other purpose with a sovereign would be perhaps, well, maybe to impose a tax. That would be the import of it. You might get some benefits, too, but you're probably not getting benefits in Antarctica if you're residing down there. So really, the overall effect of that statute, by stating it's a sovereignty requirement, really is saying it's a taxability requirement. Then if you look at that result and compare that statute or that regulation to the statute, there's no support for it, and in fact there is no requirement that there be taxable income there, and it leads to what I think is an untenable result. Foreign workers throughout the world are able to take advantage of Section 911. It helps American businesses compete. It encourages people to take jobs in foreign posts they might not otherwise be willing to accept. In a job in Antarctica where there's very important science research going on, you would want that type of encouragement. This type of consistency, I believe, is something that the judiciary has always tried to promote. And an interpretation of the regulation and the statute that would exclude a sovereignty-based interpretation, I think, is consistent because it leads to a fair result across the board. If you're in somewhere other than the United States and you're performing services down there, you should be entitled to take advantage of Section 911. If that's if the court has no questions, I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Ms. Milton.
May it please the court, my name is Terry Milton, representing the commissioner. I have not much to add to what's in our brief. I want to say critically, though, as to Mr. Harvey's point about Section 911 not saying anything about taxability of income, I would actually agree with that. Section 61 of the code is the provision that defines what gross income is, and it basically includes all amounts received. So what we're talking about here is a provision that is going to take what would normally be taxable and remove it from that treatment under certain circumstances. So it's true that there is no language in Section 911 that's imposing a tax, but it's a given in the tax code that earned income is going to be subject to tax unless there's some provision that treats it differently, which is what 911 does in some circumstances. I think it's clear. I don't notice that there's a great deal of dispute about this, actually, that the Supreme Court said in the Smith case that the term foreign country is susceptible of more than one meaning. We cited some statutes that define it differently, criminal statutes. There's a Tariff Act definition of the term. It can mean different things. There's obviously a common sense meaning to it, and we probably mostly know what we mean by it, but that's not controlling for this purpose. The tax court recognized that in its decision, looking at the Smith decision and saying, well, that was the Federal Tort Claims Act, and the other Smith decision was the Fair Labor Standards Act, and those statutes are not the Internal Revenue Code, and different considerations govern. And so the tax court considered those definitions or the way that the term had been construed for those purposes, but decided that the longstanding rule from the Martin case, 1968 decision that found Antarctica to be not a foreign country, was still good law for purposes of this provision and the exclusion of foreign earned income. I note that it is true that there are people who work in foreign countries, and if those foreign countries don't impose tax, but they fall within the definition, they are going to have a windfall if they're able to exclude the income from tax in this country and they don't pay tax in the other country. But we're talking about a regimen here that's designed to be applied across the board, and obviously we don't have any control over what another government might do in the way of taxing or not taxing income earned within its boundaries.
Well, but isn't it inequitable to find that persons can't sue the government for injuries, can't receive overtime pay, but still have to pay tax?
I don't know that I do think that it's a question of equity, and that I'm not sure that I see the things as comparable at all. I think that everybody in this country pretty much pays tax on the income that they earn, and it would be equitable if they pay tax if they earn it somewhere else.
Well, if a citizen is working in a country where the United States doesn't recognize the government, does the exclusion apply?
I don't think it does. I'm pretty sure that the definition... I read the entire regulatory scheme just yesterday, and I'm pretty sure that if you're working in a place where you're not supposed to be, you're not going to get any benefit from this provision. And I'm sorry I can't cite it to you specifically, but I'm sure that's the case.
Well, if the purpose of the exclusion was only to reduce the burden of dual taxation, why doesn't the statute just state the exclusion only applies when the taxpayer is otherwise taxed? I mean, I realize you didn't draft this legislation.
It's true. I did not. And I don't know the answer to that. I mean, they could have said any income earned outside the United States is exempt, and they didn't. They said any income earned in a foreign country is going to be exempt. So obviously, to me at least, it's obvious that they were concerned with the potential that it be taxed somewhere else. But it doesn't use that language. I would point out that in Section 911D5, I guess, there's a, and this is in the statute, not in the regs, one of the qualifications that you have to meet is bona fide residence for a period of time in the foreign country. And in the statute it says that if you have filed some statement with the government there and you've managed to exempt yourself from tax there, then you're not going to be able to claim that you're a bona fide resident there. So in that way, Congress at least is recognizing that if you've managed to avoid tax in another country that imposes tax, then you're not going to avoid tax here because you're not going to qualify under Section 911 for the exemption. So I think the purpose is clear. Obviously, there are inconsistencies, and when you're talking about a worldwide scheme, there are going to be anomalies in it. But the goal is to ensure that people pay some tax on their income, as most of us do. And in this case, the way that's accomplished is by making Antarctica a place where you're going to pay U.S. tax on your income because there is no way you're going to pay tax to another entity on it. As to the Chevron inquiry, I think I don't have much to say about that. I think step one is to look at whether or not the statute speaks clearly to the issue, and I think it's clear that the term foreign country could be construed in more than one way. Given that to be the case, then I believe that the agency's interpretation of it is entitled to deference. And we would suggest that the tax court's decision in this case is correct and should be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Milton. How much time does Mr. Harvey have? Sir, you have 2 minutes.
A ruling in favor of the petitioner in this case would help apply rules consistently across the board. This is a very unusual case because we've had the Supreme Court look at the term foreign country and decide under a plain meaning test that it can be decided or it can be determined to be a foreign country. Now, there may be other language in there, but the Supreme Court said we think the ordinary meaning of the word would include Antarctica. That's very clear. The last clause of that, the last sentence in that paragraph states, we think that the ordinary meaning of the term includes Antarctica. So we have a very strong statement from the Supreme Court that the plain meaning rule itself applies. But other than that, the fact that the government is trying to incorporate something that's not within the statute to the statute through its regulatory mechanism is something that should fail. And it also leads to some very inconsistent results for workers in Antarctica. You don't get benefits if you're injured. You don't get overtime. Yet, you have to pay for those very taxes that would be helpful in paying those type of benefits were you entitled to it. And it puts you, if a ruling in favor of the taxpayer would put him on even footing with other similarly situated foreign workers throughout the world. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel for their very fine presentations, and the case will be taken under advisement.